Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this sunny Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
I think we've seen how not to handle a quarterback negotiation over a two-year period.
I think we could have possibly seen that. It was a good day to be Dak Prescott yesterday, for sure. What did you think of that deal? What did you think of that contract? $66 million guaranteed. Not bad.
Yeah, $106 million in 15 months is going into his bank account.
Yeah,
how about that?
$106
million.
My goodness.
Hey, you know, what we all get into journalism for. You know, it was crazy. What was wild was Monday morning I was talking to somebody who was on the inside of things. It was real quiet. You know, the Cowboys had leaked left and right last week that you know, they felt like there was a sense of optimism. And it got real quiet on Thursday, which either means everybody's shutting up because things could go really badly, or they were actually getting some traction. And I think things moved pretty quickly on Monday once Stephen Jones and Todd France, Dak's agent, got basically locked in one-on-one with each other. And, you know, when I talked to somebody Monday morning, I said, look, I think it's going to get done, maybe not by the tag. They said, if it doesn't get done by the tag, and this was someone who's on the inside of it, he said to me, I bet you this ends up being a 5-year, $200 million deal in July that averages 40 per, and everybody walks away from the table feeling like they have a win. And this person in particular said to me, that's what's really important here. Both sides are trying to figure out a way to engineer a win here, because obviously Dak was going to get a win, but the Cowboys needed to feel like they were getting a win walking away after losing so badly. And so, you know, really what Dallas got out of it was, you know, Dak's number being $37.7 million under the franchise tag dropping down to $22.2 because it's a 6-year deal with two voidable years that stretches out the signing bonus. You know, in a weird way, Dak was aided by COVID. Like it was because the Cowboys got put into a situation where they were going to have a salary cap crunch here, and it became, you know, a potential win for them to try and lower his number in a tougher cap year. And then, you know, if you listen, I had a chance to talk to somebody with the Cowboys, you know, they're going to put their best spin on it. And the best spin is this. Hey, we wanted him for 5 years last year. We were, you know, we couldn't make it happen. That was the impasse. And if you add in last year's salary franchise tag, this is a 5-year deal. We got last year. We got four on top of it. It comes in at $38 million a year. Yeah, that's tough, but Jerry signed quarterbacks to market-leading deals with Tony Romo. He signed quarterbacks to market-leading deals with Troy Aikman. It's what he does. He's fine with that, and that's our comfort level. That's, of course, leaving out that they could have had Dak after the 2018 season heading into 2019 at $25 million per. They could have had him, you know, last offseason if they would have just gotten to 35 per and taken the 5 years off the table last year. It is what it is, you know, and I think it's Dak betting on himself. You know, this just never – I can tell you there's no player where I trotted out a new number over the last 2 years and people just lost it. I said $25 million for Dak 2 years ago, and everybody's like, are you out of your mind? Agents are like, that's crazy. Teams are like, that's nuts. Then it was 35. No way. He's not getting Russell Wilson money. Like, you know, even if the quarterback market's going up, well, here he is at 40, and he's 27, and there's no franchise tag. There's no trade tag or no trade clause, which means that the Cowboys are going to be motivated after year 3 of this extension to go back to the table, which means at 30 – he's going to go back to the table. And if it's another 4-year window, means at 34 he goes back to the window, and maybe 38. That's 4 deals in, you know, between 27 and 38 years old. He could, I mean, realistically, guys, Dak Prescott could be a $600 million quarterback by the time this is all done.
Yikes. Man, that is.
That's crazy.
So what does this say, Charles, if anything, about what's coming financially in the league? Is this a comment on what Jerry Jones expects with the cap?
Yeah, what I thought was really interesting with David Kanter, who's an agent, you know, he mentioned it when I was tweeting out some stuff in the thread. David Kanter replied to something that I tweeted out, and he said, you know, hey, just this, I would think Jerry knows something, and I think David hit it right on the nose. I think that, you know, Jerry's on the inside of these TV deals. He leads the TV deals. I mean, he is the guy when you're the networks and you're trying to cut a deal between he and Robert Kraft. I think he knows that where the TV deals are going to come in, and he knows that the gambling revenue, as states continue to open up over the next 5 years, it's going to mushroom. And I think he knows that revenues are going to be very, very good. I think he tipped a little bit sort of where things are going in the NFL, particularly the way that the contract is structured. You know, he's going to take with those voidable years at the end of the deal, and then having, you know, probably to sign a whole new deal again in 2024, I think he knows, you know, hey, there's going to be an astronomical amount of money that's going to flow in. And if there was probably one common denominator of what people were saying, like texting me yesterday when this deal hit, and whether it was teams or agents, that was it. It was like, wow, the TV money must be really good. And there are some people who believe that the league's going to double their TV contracts, that they think that there's a chance that this TV contract is twice what it was last time. And I mean, that's just, if that happens, if they double the TV contracts, I mean, you're looking at a $250 million salary cap in 5 years, you know, I mean, something like it, just insane, even with the rollback.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Charles, the news of the day here locally has been Isaiah Wilson, the Titans' first-round pick, traded yesterday to Miami, basically swapping seventh-round picks with Miami. What have you thought of this whole Isaiah Wilson situation, and how surprised were you that Miami's taken a shot on Isaiah Wilson at this point, given everything that's happened?
Given what Wilson said, you know, and even in the social media posts that were stripped out later, I mean, like his actions were enough, but then when the actions cross into words and someone just, you know, essentially declaring, I'm finished, you know, with this franchise, particularly when it's someone of that age, you know, had a first round pick spent on him, and, you know, the franchise is bending over backwards trying to, you know, get things right with him. It stinks when you're in that situation. It becomes a dump situation, but it happens. I mean, you get guys that, just for whatever reason you think are not, you know, mentally mature enough to handle, you know, everything that gets laid into their lap. You know, I think of Dwayne Haskins with Washington. As soon as he walked in the door there, within a couple of months, all you heard from inside that franchise is he's not mentally mature enough to handle what's coming for him. Not what we're giving him now, and particularly not what's coming down the road when he's going to have an opportunity to be a starting quarterback for Washington. And, you know, I think that it's just you're not happy with it. You had a terrible offseason with other acquisitions. I mean, it was this – you know, look, 2020, basically the period from – you know, February until camp kicked off in 2020 is probably when John Robinson will try to completely block out of his memory for as long as he possibly can. Now, you know, you can look at other deals. You know, Derrick Henry. I mean, there have been other. He's had some wins there, but there were some really big losses, and you just can't have a player like that, given the number of transgressions that occurred, and particularly when it gets taken to social media. Teams will suffer, you know, a lot of thorns and a lot of problems. They feel like they can turn a guy around. But when it's all landing on social media for everybody to see, you know, teams move to pull the plug pretty quickly on that. And, you know, it's interesting, different player, but sort of a similar situation. Trent Brown, you know, the Raiders gave Trent Brown a ton of money, brought him in from the Patriots. And I can't tell you how many conversations I had with people inside the Raiders organization that were just like, we got to get rid of this guy. Like he's not getting it. There's too much stuff going on social media. We don't trust him with COVID. There were just way too many problems with him. And I think he was gonna be cut. I was like, that guy's absolutely getting cut by the Raiders. So for them to basically give him away back to the Patriots is emblematic of, you know, a franchise that once you lose trust in a player and he's taking it to social media and just doesn't want to be there, there's very little that you can do in that situation. And I think it's those two cases show it's when a guy's got a ton of money and can just blow you off, or when a guy's young and just doesn't want to hear it. Those are probably the two situations that teams are probably quickest to pull the plug on.
Well, let's go through some other Titans' greatest hits. Who and how much is going to pay Jadeveon Clowney? Who is going to pay Jadeveon Clowney how much? There's the sentence.
Good. This is a good question. He's going to have traction. And the reason why I know this is because when Watt when Watt became available with the Texans, and teams thought that there was a trade possibility there, a number of teams reached out to the Texans, and then, you know, when Watt was cut or released, obviously, you know, so many teams were interested in him, and I think that shows that teams are look, they're going to be in it for anybody who's got, you know, a decent level of, you know, whether it's pass rush ability or ability to hold the edge against the run or whatever, they're going to reach for those guys, and that's going to create a market for Clowney. And so I think, you know, look, Yannick Ngakoue, you know, Shaq Barrett, there are going to be a few different guys who have pass rushing ability. But I do know that some franchises that were interested in Clowney prior to him landing with the Titans, we'll see what their cap situations end up being. But, you know, whether it's a Baltimore, whether it's a Cleveland, there are going to be some teams that still think he has ability to come in. And, you know, look, if he's in the off-season program, if he's healthy, if he's working out, if the teams – I mean, teams are going to want him in the facility. I mean, I think that's going to be vitally important. But what I think was interesting is I was talking to an executive who was telling me they would have interest in Clowney, and he said, the one thing I look for is just the organization to firebomb him, like frag him, just kill him over what happened. You know, just it didn't work out. He expected to just see a litany of, you know, stories just really roasting him. And the fact that it never happened led him to kind of reach out to people that were familiar with the organization and ask, like, hey, are they completely sour on the guy? Do they hate him? You know, do they hate the, you know, mistake? And the answers he got back were no. You know, it didn't work out, and there were some things that the team would have done differently. But, you know, he wasn't someone that came into the locker room and was a cancer and that kind of a problem. So it's not like an Ndamukong Suh where a guy walks in the door and within a year or two you're trying to turn around and get him out because you kind of feel like you got what you could on him.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Charles, really appreciate you taking time to join us today, and great stuff as always, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys, and welcome back, Robbie.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Charles. When we come back, we'll react a little bit of what Charles had to say there and get into that Dak Prescott deal a little bit more. Great day to be a Dallas Cowboys quarterback yesterday for Dak Prescott. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The NCAA tournament is right around the corner, and it's time for you to sign up and play the official Game Bracket Challenge brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket, Cool Springs Wine and Spirits, European Collision Repair, and Coach's Corner Sports Grill. Go to thegamenashville.com or the Game Nashville app now to sign up and play. The brackets will open after the teams have been selected on Sunday, March the 14th. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrode. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning. Thanks to Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports for joining us in the last segment, as he does each and every Tuesday at 9 o'clock. And, Joe, it is interesting, like, hearing the breakdown of Dak Prescott's contract there. Obviously signs a four-year, $160 million deal, $126 million of which is guaranteed, a $66 million signing bonus, and he's going to be making a whole lot of money here in the next few months as well. So a good day to be Dak Prescott. It was fascinating to hear Charles break down, like, how this contract came to be and took place over the last couple of years with the Cowboys and Dak Prescott, to the point where, like, if you would have just signed him a couple years ago, the number you'd be looking at right now would look great by comparison to what he just signed.
Right. I mean, like you said, you know, Jerry signed the market leading deals on those, Romo and Aikman. Great. But if you don't, it's better.
Yeah.
It's actually better for you to not do that. And, I think the lesson is, if you have a good quarterback, you should probably pay him, because, and this is what the Cowboys ultimately face, is like, okay, well, we could look elsewhere, but when the heck are we going to get someone as good as this guy? He's not elite. He's very good.
Yeah.
But now they're in a bind, and they paid him. And if you just did it when you had a chance to lock him up earlier, think about how much more money you'd have for other things. And, of course, I thought Charles – very interesting stuff on the cap and the TV deal. $250 in 5 years. So again, so let's say it's let's take this to the duration of Tannehill's contract. You know, so let's say it's, you know, $210 million in 3 years or whatever. You know, think about Tannehill's deal and the kind of freedom that you'll have to do other things around that deal compared with other teams in this league.
Yeah.
Kind of enticing.
It is enticing. I just wonder, like, from Jerry Jones's perspective, do you already regret giving Ezekiel Elliott that deal? Like, he's a guy, I mean, you talked about it, and we had a similar conversation here in Nashville with Derrick Henry. That position, it's so, I guess you could go either way on it right now. And Ezekiel Elliott last year, 15 games, 979 yards on the ground. Now, obviously, you know, he's a big part of the passing game too, and he did have, you know, some more yards through. He had 1,300 total yards from scrimmage last year. So he is involved in their passing game, but he does not look like the same guy. And he's only 25.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not ready to say, oh, man, you really blew it. And he's, and obviously, if he's this Ezekiel Elliott, then that's a problem. But yeah. I'm not, you know, he could bounce back and have a bigger. If he's what he was before 20, I think it's worthwhile. He's a heck, because, again, he is very much involved in the passing game.
Yeah.
Big part of that. So, yeah, but still, I mean, the don't pay the running back thing, I think it's often true. It's true more than it isn't. It's just that it's not an absolute rule, and the Tennessee Titans prove that.
They did, and we'll see if Zeke can bounce back next year. Like, I just look at the Cowboys, and to your point, like, I think Dak Prescott is a good quarterback. I'm not putting Dak Prescott in the same conversation as the Russell Wilsons and the Deshaun Watsons and the Mahomes. I mean, heck, last year he wasn't even in the same conversation as Josh Allen. I mean, I think he's really good. With the limitations that you have financially right now, with three players making so much money of Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, and Amari Cooper, like, I think they're going to have a really tough time, at least in the next couple of years in Dallas, of putting together a team around them that can be competitive in the NFC. I realize their division sucks,
yeah,
and it's awful, and maybe you've got an easier route to the playoffs there, but it's just difficult for me to imagine them being one of the upper echelon teams in the NFC.
That's the thing, is they can go 9-7, win the division, get a home playoff game next year.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be shocked at all if that happens, and if that's the case, okay. And if you draft really well, then maybe you're fine. But that's the thing. You put so much pressure on your drafts to be really good and be really good right away. Now, a couple years from now, maybe that again, if our Cowboys writer is right, that in a few months this is going to look different, then, you know, then I get it. I mean, that's where it goes with quarterback. It just keeps going up and up and up. If the cap eventually turns around quickly and all that, then they could be fine before this deal is over. But, yeah, in the short term, how are they going to be a great team?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And to your point about the cap and what this looks like for the future of the quarterback position, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but if that's true and, you know, this time 2-3 years from now, it looks like, you know, a top 10 quarterback deal rather than setting the new bar, which there's no reason for me to believe that it won't look like that. I mean, some of these young guys are going to get paid a lot of money. Like we talked about it earlier, Josh Allen could be a guy that makes a ton of money coming up. Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson. Like, it's a good time to be a quarterback, to the point where, like, you know, this time 5 years from now, I'm not going to be surprised if there are quarterbacks in the league that are making $50 million a year. I mean, it absolutely could be on the table.
Oh, it won't be long. No, I got to look that up. So what year was it that Matthew Stafford signed the ridiculous $30 million deal? I mean, it was like 2017, right?
That sounds right. It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah,
and NFL, people were talking about that being just insane.
Yeah, it was. August of 2017, NFL record. It was actually $27 million. And people were like, oh, my God. So that's 3 years ago. It's 4 years ago.
4 years ago.
Oh, it's not 2020 anymore, thank goodness. But 3 years from now, and especially if the cap does this, oh, they'll be $50 million. Josh Allen is a $50 million, I bet you, a $50 million a year quarterback.
And it's just think about the conversations we were having a year ago about Josh Allen.
Right.
And what a limitation he was for the Bills. And now we're talking about him potentially being one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the next couple of years. Like, I think he will. I think he might reach $50 million. The interesting guy to me is Lamar? Like, what do you do? Like, what exactly does his number land at? Because, I mean, you're talking about an NFL MVP. Obviously, he does. His skill set is really unique to the Ravens, but they do it very well. They did it and executed well here in Nashville in the playoff game. He got the playoff win off his back. What does his next deal look like? I mean, John Harbaugh has talked about he's a guy they absolutely want to build around and be a part of the future here. Don't blame him for that being the case at all. I just wonder, with his numbers, what is the next contract for Lamar Jackson going to look like? That, to me, is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting because I think, unlike any other quarterback in the league, he's not like a universally pursued quarterback, for
right.
example. If he's on, I mean, not everybody's going to say, okay, I want him to be my quarterback, because you do. It's just, he's just different than I think any other quarterback in the league. It's kind of like if Taysom Hill were a quarterback in the league, you know, it's very much it's a running position there. The offense is built around option football, which we've never seen in the NFL to this extent, other than maybe like Jay Berwanger's day, you know, I don't know, maybe in the 30s. So does that take his price down for them because he wouldn't – I don't know. I think if they're – you know, if the guy's an MVP who took the team to 14-2, how does he not get the exact same kind of money?
Yeah.
But it is different, and maybe it will be. Maybe it'll be a little bit less.
I'm very fascinated to see what that looks like. And the bottom line, like – and you said this last year when he signed the deal – and I agree with you at the time, but Ryan Tannehill signs the contract last year, the 4-year deal with the Titans, and you said, like, give this thing a few months, and it'll look like a great deal for the Titans. And it did. I mean, Tannehill comes back. He plays really well for the Titans again last year, and I think it already looked like a bargain contract with some of the numbers that are about to get thrown out here with some quarterbacks around the league. I mean, you're talking about bargain basement deals for Ryan Tannehill to the point where if you're the Titans – maybe that does free you up a couple years down the road to build a team around him and get in under a salary cap with a quarterback operating at that number. I mean, this could be very good news for the Titans moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to look like a bag of generic Cheetos in a couple years. Not in quality, but in price.
Yeah.
Dollar General, and come on through. And I mean, that's the thing. Last offseason, you always have to balance it. Especially with that deal, and I think the Henry deal, too, is good and is going to look good at the end. But the Tannehill deal was also part of that disastrous offseason, and so you do have to keep that in mind.
When we come back, we'll switch gears and dive into a little college football, get into a little bit of Vanderbilt talk as well. They've got an interesting plan that is very unique in terms of the college football landscape. We'll discuss what that is next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Did you know Joe writes for The Athletic?
So, I'd like to promote a couple things on The Athletic.
Oh, good.
Real quick.
Good.
You guys really think I'm a good promoter?
Yeah.
Probably the best in the league.
Yeah, that's what they say. Top three. Yep. Right up there.
Yeah. Here's another edition of Shameless Plugs with Joe Rexrode.
Ah, yes, it is. Another edition of Shameless Plugs here with Joe Rexrode, one of the best in the league in terms of promoters, especially here on this program. Do a great job of it. And Joe, you come out with an interesting piece at theathletic.com where you can find Joe's work about Vanderbilt football and a unique plan. And when I saw your idea for this and when I saw the headline of this, I was very intrigued because the concept around this is not really something you hear about in college football, really, quite frankly, in any sport, when you talk about the idea of a 10-year plan. What do you mean? What do they mean by a 10-year plan with Vanderbilt football?
First of all, love that song. Am I kind of like Jimmy Mouth of the South Heart?
Yes.
Remember him?
Yes, you are.
Remember him?
Yes.
I get to see him live one time at a WWF.
Really?
Event in Battle Creek, Michigan. Yeah, George Animal Steel.
Wow.
Oh, heck yeah, baby. Leaping Lanny Poffo. I think I got a signed frisbee from him. Anyway, Vanderbilt.
A signed frisbee?
I'm pretty sure. And I don't remember if, like, they gave free Frisbees out to kids. I mean, I was young, you know.
I've never heard of a signed Frisbee, but that's cool.
Oh, yeah.
Also, the Jumping Bomb Angels performed that. They're pretty awesome.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, Vanderbilt football. Yeah, 10-year plan. That's one thing that – so I set out to write about Vanderbilt football, and I – you know, Barton Simmons being hired is interesting. Yeah. Barton Simmons, of course, recruiting analyst for a long time, national recruiting analyst for 24/7, Rivals before that, very respected guy in that field, probably as respected as anybody in that field. And he's, you know, he's a NBA guy, Nashville guy, played at Yale, so he's an Ivy Leaguer too. But Clark Lee, they've been friends since fifth grade. He brought him on to be the GM. That's, first of all, there are a couple programs that have that title, but his title is GM, general manager.
Yeah,
and it's sort of like that of an NFL team. Now, of course, the actual GM for any college team is the head coach. I mean, Clark Lee is making the choices, but he's given him a lot of responsibility on that end. And then I also wrote about Earl Bennett in this story because I think it's really interesting. People, of course, remember Earl Bennett, great Vanderbilt player. Good player in the NFL with the Bears. He's about to be Dr. Earl Bennett. He's getting his PhD from Houston. He's already got 2 degrees from Vanderbilt. And Clark Lee called him up and convinced him to come here to be director of player development, which is – and really, like, Earl Bennett is kind of the exact model of what you want if you want to win at Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
You find someone in drivable range who's talented enough to play in the NFL – but maybe a little bit overlooked, and that he becomes a player like that. Also a great student, does everything with excellence, and you got to find a whole bunch of those guys. But yeah, the 10-year plan part is interesting because, like you said, I mean, if you're a coach, I mean, it's hard for coaches today to get to the 5-year plan. Everybody has a 5-year plan. It's hard for coaches to get to that anymore. We see coaches fired in year 1, 2, 3 a lot, right? So the five coaches say, let me get my players. Let me get my players in. Full recruiting cycle. And then you can judge me, right? That's fair. But Clark Lee is like, 10-year plan. You know, now I think some of that is the fact that, look, at Vanderbilt, I mean, over the years, they've had a lot of not success.
Yeah.
They've also had some long tenures of coaches who have had not success. I mean, there's less pressure there. Like, you can probably hold that job longer without winning. So, I mean, I guess you can look at it from that perspective, but like they are going to be very methodical about this. Someone in the comments of the story said this is kind of like Moneyball, and I hadn't even thought about it like that, but it kind of is. It's deep dives statistically. What has worked for Vanderbilt, like going through every recruit they've had over a long period of time? What has not worked? What are we going to do? Go from there. You still have to, of course, you know, you have to like recruit
those players,
actually get them to come to campus. But what you have to do if you're Vanderbilt is you have to identify those high ceiling guys who aren't there yet, who are a little bit overlooked. I mean, you're gonna get into some battles for some 4 stars or whatever, and you have to win some of those. But you have to have a high hit rate on kids who have the ceiling to be NFL players. Because that's one thing they said, Barton Simmons and Clark, like, got to recruit NFL players. You can't compete in the SEC if you don't have pros,
right?
And Vanderbilt's had some good pros over the year, but you got more. And you got to be able to find them, and then you got to keep them too. And the whole transfer portal thing is a part of the sport. You got to be able to recruit out of it. But one quote from Barton Simmons in this story is like, we can't play fantasy football with the transfer portal like some programs do. And so it's like retention is another huge part of this on the long-term side of things.
Yeah, I found this very interesting just because we've talked about maybe the different approaches that Vanderbilt needs to take. And I've spent most of my time talking about, you know, maybe on the field, you've got to do things differently offensively, or you've got to bring in a different offensive style or you know, maybe running an option or something like that. And I've spent a lot of time talking about that. I mean, it doesn't look like that's the way that they're going to go here, but this is a kind of a different way of handling the program in terms of bringing in Barton Simmons, getting to a deep dive and trying to figure out, you know, what's worked here, what's not, what are things that you have to do here that are different to get to a place where you can consistently be competitive in the SEC. Like, I don't know what kind of a head coach Clark Lee is going to be. I mean, we're going to find out over the next few years what kind of a head coach he can be at Vanderbilt. But if I'm a Vandy fan right now, I'm pretty excited about the way that he's handled this so far in terms of, it looks like he realizes that you've got to do things a different way. And we talked about that when he was hired. He's a guy very familiar with the program. He knows what's worked and what hasn't worked here. If I'm a Vandy fan right now, based on the way that he's approached this so far, I'm very excited. Now, again, to your point, you still got to actually be able to go out and recruit these players, and that at the end of the day.
And coach them.
And coach them. And that's those two things are going to tell the story of what the Clark Lea era at Vanderbilt looks like. But they seem to be thinking outside of the box a little bit, and that to me would fire me up if I'm a Vanderbilt fan, because I don't think there's been a whole lot of that as of late.
Yeah, well, it's like they're trying to, yeah, you know, they're trying to be forward thinking and certainly use data, use analytics, use all these tools that you have at your disposal if you can get in there and you get the right people to, you know, to analyze them. But there's a couple other things too that are kind of coming at this time with Clark Lea coming in. One is, yes, I believe there are facility improvements coming. Yes, I absolutely agree with any Vanderbilt fan who says, okay, you show me.
Yeah.
But I do believe it's happening. I think there are, and I'm not just guessing that, you know, it's an educated guess, a pretty educated guess, that there are things that are actually coming. And honestly, I think even with Barton Simmons taking this job, and yes, he's working with his longtime buddy. They've been friends. They were in each other's weddings, all this stuff. But I think that's a sign, too. Some of the people they've been able to bring on, I think, are a little bit of a sign that they believe it's happening. And then, two, name, image, likeness.
Yeah.
And this is something – I didn't get into this too much with Barton in this story. I think that's a story for later, and I can gladly promote it on this show if you'd like.
Yes,
and,
we'd love that.
Talk about it for hours if you want. But that's an interesting thing for a program like Vanderbilt. And I've always thought this about name, image, likeness. If you have a program, everybody, you know, I've heard people say, "Wow, the rich will get richer and all this stuff." Like, actually, I think you could see some situations with some top recruits thinking outside the box and going elsewhere because of this. And I think Vanderbilt in this city, there's a lot of opportunity on the name, image, likeness front. So those two factors are part of it as well. And you're right. You have to do something different. It's not going to be the offense, but this is, you know, this is a, I like the approach here. And I like the hire of Barton Simmons. I like the hire of Earl Bennett. You know, Earl Bennett made a great point. It's like, okay, degree, degree, degree. Everybody talks about degree, right? You know, of course, it's big at Vanderbilt. But he's like, I know guys I've played with who, and I'm paraphrasing him right now, like who didn't get jobs out of college.
Yeah.
So, like, part of his job is like, I'm going to get guys like jobs and get them ready for jobs along with a lot of other things that he's doing. You know, it's sort of the idea of, you know, there's always grandiose statements when people take over programs. And so this is like the best development program in the country,
right?
Something they said. Or the best student athlete experience in the country, something they said. And, you know, a lot of other Power Five schools will be like, well, we have chocolate fountains at our school.
Yes.
So you know, LSU, everybody has their own, you know, their own little cove they can take a nap in the locker room, right? So that's got to be part of it too. You have to be competitive in that way. But I do feel like they're thinking of some different things that other programs maybe haven't yet.
And look, on the field, I mean, they're in a tough spot right now from a roster standpoint. Like, you've got to build this thing up. So I'm not sitting here saying that it's going to be like immediately successful with Clark Lea. There's going to have to be, I think, some patience involved here, because right now, I mean, their roster's just not in great shape. And we talked about Keon Henry Brooks leaving a couple weeks ago in the transfer portal. You're talking about one of your best players right there, so that doesn't help either. But I've talked to a couple of Vanderbilt friends that are friends of mine, who have been just down and out on this program for the last 3-4 years with Derek Mason there. And there is a buzz and an excitement. And some of that is just hiring any new coach, but specifically with this staff that I sense a great deal of excitement about, which I haven't in a long time for Vanderbilt fans.
Yeah, it's a guy who knows the place well. Obviously, he's been here. He didn't experience winning here, you know, Clark. So, but he's a guy who understands it and I think has thought about this job for a long time. Does it guarantee he's going to be successful? No, but he is definitely taking a very thorough dive into why it hasn't worked. And look, I'll say this forever until Vanderbilt actually does this, but they've got things to offer that are no different than Stanford, Northwestern, et cetera, other than the facilities.
Yep.
But everything else, it's in place to have a competitive quality football program. I don't know about winning championships in the SEC. I mean, it's never happened.
Pretty high bar.
That's a, but you know, I mean, I also don't blame them for talking about that. I mean, of course, you're going to set the bar high. They can be a consistent 7-win program that rises up every few years like Northwestern does and actually makes a run at it. They absolutely can be that if they get competitive on the facility front.
Hey, Preds fans, join 102.5 The Game tomorrow night from 6 to 7 p.m. for Smashville Live with special guest Preds players Mark Borowiecki and Matt Benning. I will be a part of that as well with Hal Gill. And Smashville Live airs every Wednesday on 102.5 The Game during the Preds season and will feature Preds players, former players, and other special guests. And you can also watch the show online via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. Smashville Live brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. To view or listen to past shows, go to thegamenashville.com/Smashville Live. When we come back, lots of talk lately about maybe some cheating in the SEC. I know that may be a shock to some of us, but a really interesting story that's come out in the last couple of days involving some high-level football programs in the SEC as well. We'll discuss that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, we've talked a little SEC football today with Vanderbilt, but some more news in SEC football as well. Some alleged cheating going on. Now, I know by the look on your face, Joe, that surprises you that cheating may be taking place in the SEC.
My word.
I know. We haven't seen any of that before in the SEC, but some reports coming out over the weekend that are pretty funny, kind of stemming from a YouTube video. And this has Valdosta High School coach Rush Probst involved in this. And basically in this video, in this audio recording that's come out, basically has him alleging that it's 15 minutes worth of audio that Georgia donors are paying up to $150,000 per player to sign with the Bulldogs, which would violate NCAA rules. And he names Kirby Smart in this, also names Alabama head coach Nick Saban and accusing them of paying recruits. And specifically in this recording refers to former Georgia running back and now member of the Cleveland Browns, Nick Chubb, and he alleges that Chubb took three different $60,000 payments from Georgia to return for his senior season in 2017 instead of entering the NFL draft. And Chubb actually addressed that over the weekend in a tweet saying, quote, "If I needed money, I would have gone pro."
And I misunderstood that. That makes sense.
Oh, you're talking about after his junior year, yeah.
Yeah, like what? I saw the tweet, and I was like, no, man, you can't go pro.
You have to play 3 years.
But he's talking about they're talking about keeping him
right,
in school.
Because remember, he had the injury.
Yeah.
I think he got hurt against Tennessee, but had the injury, and then he came back for his senior season. But what do you make of this story? Obviously, a high school football coach with some ties to Jeremy Pruitt as well, by the way. We'll get to that here in just a second.
He's Pruitt's mentor.
Yeah, he's like his
Oh, you better believe it, baby.
Role model.
That's who they were meeting at McDonald's.
Yeah, that's who they were meeting at the McDonald's. What do you think of all this, and how shocked are you that maybe Georgia and Alabama may be getting some recruits and not being on the up and up about it?
Well, by the way, according to the Athens Banner Herald, he was talking to Michael Nub Nelson.
Michael Nub Nelson.
Michael Nub Nelson, executive director of the Valdosta Touchdown Club.
Yeah.
And yeah, by the way, club. Pruitt did quite well in Georgia, I will tell you.
He did.
Pruitt had some, that's his prime recruiting success.
It is.
In the state of Georgia. I mean, it's great. I love when this stuff comes to light. And I just wish everyone would be like, yeah, I got paid. What of it, man? This is where we need to get to. We need to get to name, image, likeness, open the market, and let's see it all unfold. I mean, it would be, we think recruiting is a separate sport now. Imagine if we have this.
It'd
all
be awesome.
It's fantastic. I mean, no one should be like, if any Georgia fan who's like mad about this, you should just be proud. Good job, Kirby.
Way to go, buddy.
Now, except, and you know, Dan Patrick said it on his radio show, and Dan Patrick says some stuff on his radio show that's a bunch of BS, but Dan Patrick said on his radio show that Georgia was getting sloppy in recruiting. And, and now we have this come out a couple weeks later. And by the way,
he also said about McDonald's bags.
Well, that's what I'm referring to. Patrick, the McDonald's bag thing is I don't think there's truth to that. He also had some stuff about the Big Ten that was not true. So, other than that, great show. Great show, Dan.
Other than that,
Isaiah Wilson was a great pick. This is not shocking in any way.
How much money do you think Isaiah Wilson made at Georgia? They pay him $150,000 to come in?
I will say this. I mean, if you really think about the money here, I can't buy that there are – I mean, $150,000 to sign? That you're talking about –
you know how much money that would be?
Yeah. I mean, what are you talking about here? Like, you're talking about the three or four absolute five stars that you bring in a given year, right? I mean, there's no way. I've always thought, you know, it's very different, college football and basketball. College basketball, it's all through the shoe companies, and it's sure things galore in college basketball. And in a lot of cases, they're going to play for you for 1 year, and they're going to be stars, and they're going to go to the NBA. We talk about the top, top guys. Football, that is a bad investment if you are given that kind of money on the front end. A lot of these guys don't pan out. It's way less of a hit rate on five stars and even high four stars and what you become as a player. And I think there's a lot more in football of, like, the Chubb thing's interesting. You know, stay in school for your fourth year, or you've had this incredible year and you get money because of that. You get paid for performance. And I've heard that about a lot of different programs where, I mean, just envelopes in the locker after a game.
Yeah.
You know, you'll have a couple thousand, or it's like $1,000 per sack or whatever. I mean, stuff like that I think is a lot more common than huge sums up front, because you're going to have bad investments all over the place.
All over the place.
And what is the salary cap anyway? Where's that going in the SEC? Is that going up too?
Probably so. That's a good question. If you recognize the name of this guy, Rush Probst, he was actually the head coach at Hoover High School when the show was on MTV back in the day of them doing the two-a-days. Good old Pruitt on there too.
Pruitt with the asparagus.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Pruitt's mentor.
Some asparagus. What's
he's
that?
Also, he's Pruitt's mentor, and he has two families, right?
He's got two families.
So Rush Probst found out he has just another family.
He has two families.
Yeah. Yes.
Two wives, four kids, bunch of dogs.
I'm going to find this.
Not Georgia Bulldogs.
No, not the Georgia Bulldogs.
So he married his high school sweetheart, had three children, and then so he has remarried to his second family's wife, but he had four children already.
Yeah.
He had seven children. One with his actual wife and one.
Are you
one
sure
with
we're not talking about Philip Rivers?
Well, MTV.
Philip Rivers goes 20 kids per wife.
MTV may need to come back and do a show just on this guy. Screw the two-a-days. I mean, it's a good show. But just do an exclusive show on this fella.
I'll watch.
I'll watch it, too.
I probably won't, but they should.
I mean, just look at it. If you go and look at it, like do a Google image search for him, too. Dude looks like a football coach, kind
of. Oh, man, he's a ball coach.
Yeah.
Two family having ball coach. You know, just your classic. Henry. Your classic two family having ball coach.
Out there.
Antonio Cromartie.
There you go.
We wish him well in his future endeavors. Who knows? Maybe Jeremy Pruitt and Rush Probst end up back together at some point in high school football.
I just had a mute issue. Keep talking, Rush.
Keep on talking.
Rush Probst, keep talking. I want to hear more about this stuff. This is awesome.
That does it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Darren, Donica, Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.